Pom 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 pom. We are Saturday, May the 27th of 2006, and this is the episode number 10 of the Pomcast in English.
1984 won't be like 1984.
Get your iPod. iPod's here.
You like your Macintosh. You like your Macintosh. Your Macintosh.
Apple. And the Macintosh, of all the machines I've ever seen, is the only one that needs outstanding.
iPod, 1,000 songs in your pocket.
If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today?
And welcome back, everybody, to an audio version of the Pomcast in English, because the last two shows you had, number 8 and number 9, were video shows. The number 8 was the video podcast from Coco Alive House in Amsterdam, and I take this opportunity to give once again a shout out to all the guys over there and to Coco Radio, for example. And the show number 9 was a video podcast from the Mac Expo Amsterdam, and which was also really cool, with a few really interesting interviews. And we'll speak about the Mac Expo in a few minutes, but not the one in Amsterdam, the one in Cologne. First of all, I'm gonna introduce my guest for tonight. I'm alone tonight, but I'm with a guest which does with his company a lot of pretty cool tool. And my guest tonight is Glenn Aspslag from eCam. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Steph. How's it going?
I'm doing fine. And from your side of the world, how is it?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day.
Okay. So you're from eCam, and we're going to speak about a few products you have in a few minutes. Those products are eyeglasses, conference recorder, call recorder, and other tools you have. First of all, I have to speak a little bit about the show and about the partner we have for the t-shirts. You know, listeners, that we have a partner for the t-shirts since a few weeks now. This partner is Spreadshirt, which is a German company, but which is all over Europe, and they do some pretty cool things for us, and they give a free t-shirt every week to our listeners, so one of you guys will win a free t-shirt. And they also did some pretty cool, well, they should do in the next day, some pretty cool t-shirts for the team, for the staff, to be ready to be worn at the Mac Expo Cologne. So the way to win a Spreadshirt t-shirt is, first of all, you don't have to be a French-speaking guy, because I have so many French-speaking guys listening to the English show and the German show that it's not really fair. So I want non-French speaking guys also winning some t-shirts, and I'm ready to send t-shirts all over Europe, and I guess Spreadshirt is ready to send it in the US, so I hope. The way to win a t-shirt actually is pretty simple. It's to do your own spread shop. So go to the shop on the website on pomcast.com. So you click on shop, and on the bottom there is a link to Spreadshirt. You have to click on this link, because this way they know that it's coming from my site, and then you have to open a shop, which is free, and you can make money. And what you have to do is just design a t-shirt or whatever, something else, or a mug, whatever, where you write something about the podcast, like I'm a Pomcast listener, or pom 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 pom, or whatever you want, but just write it, and then send me the link to your shop, post it in the comments. So don't send it via email, but post it on the comment of this show, and then you will win. Another thing I've changed, by the way, is the first chapter of this show will be a direct link, which is actually a permalink, to the post of this show. So this way you don't have to search for the post, because in the meantime the website is pretty heavy. There is a few different things on the website, a few different podcasts, and it's not always easy to find the correct post after a few days. So now we're going to speak a bit about the Mac Expo Cologne, because it's in now less than 2 days, actually. Less than 10 days. Oh, actually not less than 10 days, but less than 2 weeks anyway. It starts the 8th of June, June 8th to the 10th, so the 8th, the 9th, and 10th, Thursday to till Saturdays. For all the listeners that can go there in Cologne, it's pretty cool, actually. It's a bit smaller than the Apple Expo. It's actually 3 or 4 times smaller than the Apple Expo in Paris, but it's still pretty cool. We're going to be there with another Pumpcaster, another German colleague of mine, being on the podcast, which is Tybooks, and some of the guys from the Mac community, the user groups in Germany, with the guys from the Mac at Camp, and some pretty other cool guys. So be sure to be there, and be sure to pass by. We'll be with the Mac user groups not far away from the Apple booth. So it's going to be three pretty cool days, and we're going to do some video podcasts from there, by the way, both in German and English. I guess most of them in English, but a lot in German, and maybe one or two in French, but I don't think so. So be sure to check the website, and if you cannot go there, then you will live it by procuration, so to say, by watching at the website. Now we're going to start directly with you, Glenn, because it's the goal of this show is to know a little bit more about eCam. And first of all, I would like you to tell us a bit about you, about your background. Well, first of all, there is a pretty funny story, is that your ancestors are actually from Belgium, if I'm right.
That is correct. My father's father was born in Belgium.
Okay. And my brother, you told me.
My brother just is going back there in a couple of days to track down our long-lost relatives. They haven't heard from the American Aspa slaves for about 50 or 60 years, I think.
Oh, cool.
So they're meeting up and staying at their house and everything.
That's really cool. So you and your brother are the guys at eCam. So you told me your brother is actually more programming.
Well, his focus is more Mac programming right now. I've been working on a lot of Palm Pilot programs, and I do the website and the marketing. We're actually twin brothers, so we work really well together.
Oh, okay.
And we both, you know, we're both longtime Mac fans. We started out with a Mac SE back in I guess that would be early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we've had, you know, Power Mac, PowerBook, G3, G4, titanium, aluminum.
Okay. And I guess now you have everything Intel in the meantime.
Now we're working on getting the Intel Macs. We got a mini setup, dual booting, and we're having a lot of fun.
Okay, cool. How did it start, all this eCam company?
Well, we started it back in 1999, actually. We were living together in school, and we just realized that there were a lot of programs out there, you know, that needed to be written. And we kind of got into it because there were websites that let you, you know, put your software on sale, and they would handle the reselling and the credit card processing. And this was for Palm Pilots at the time, actually. And we wrote a little program, we put it online, and sure enough, someone bought it, you know, and we kind of caught the fever. So, you know, ever since then, we've just been, you know, writing programs, putting them online. Now we have our own website, and now we just do it full time.
Actually, it's not a question I've prepared, but now I'm thinking about that, about the Palm Pilot. How's the Palm Pilot market doing? I mean, for software makers, for the Palm Pilots? Because I guess there's still a lot of install-based Palms, even though Palm itself, the hardware maker, is also turning a bit to Pocket PC.
It's an interesting spot to be in. I worked at a Palm Pilot software company for a while, and you know, right now Palm is kind of sending mixed messages about the operating system. You know, like you said, releasing a Windows Palm is a big deal. I mean, for a company that puts a lot of effort into keeping with the Palm OS, you know, then to find out the company that makes the Palm OS is moving away from it is kind of an interesting spot to be in.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it kind of made a lot of people start to wonder, you know, how much effort they should really be putting into Palm. But I mean, it's understandable why they moved to Windows. I think that Palm probably got a couple hundred phone calls a day from people saying, you know, I'd love to deploy Trios to my entire 2,000 person workforce, but you know, if it doesn't run Windows, you know, so then they probably got that over and over and over again, and just said, finally, you know, well, we're sitting on something here. We should do a Windows Palm.
Yeah, and it's actually, it gave me the feeling of this health race over once again. You know, like when iTunes came on the PC, or like more recently when Rogomibe did Airfoil for Windows.
It's definitely a trend. You know, the convergence of the operating systems is a really popular trend this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, and also dual booting Windows on a Mac. I mean, whoever would have thought we could do that?
In any cases. But still, my opinion about that is still that it's the most the smartest thing Apple ever did in the last 30 years. Boot camp. Of course, we could discuss 3 hours about that, and a lot of people does not really agree with me. I mean, if Apple did not do it, it would have not been a smart idea anyway. So, but anyway, we come back to Ecamm, or maybe you can tell us about Ecamm. You told us a bit also, but about the beautiful city of Somerville. Because Somerville, the way it's written, it's like German, Sommer.
Really?
Summer in German, yeah. It's the way we write summer in German.
Oh, Sommer. I never knew that. Well, yeah. Somerville is I don't know if you've heard of Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah, Cambridge, where the university is.
Yeah, there's Harvard University and there's MIT.
Yeah.
And Somerville is kind of a little residential area off the side of Cambridge. There's about 70,000 people squeezed into a little area to the north of Cambridge, mm-hmm. and we're right outside Boston.
And, okay.
It's a nice place to live. There's you see a lot of Apple stickers stuck on the back of cars, and you know, you can pick up a couple thousand Wi-Fi signals just walking down the street. It's a very computer oriented area to live in, with all the universities and the computer programmers. So it's kind of mm-hmm. nice.
Cool. Well, by the way, for the people who don't know, what for are those stickers that you get from Apple when you buy a computer? Is to put it on your car. it's kind of obvious. It's the best place to put it. It's on the back window of your car, and this way you can see others, member of the sect, and that's right. Or you can also put it on the PC, because I've seen that also a lot of time. People sticking the Apple logo on the laptops. A few days ago, there was once again a guy working on this $100 PC project that had an HP computer with two big Apple logos sticked.
Oh, excellent. It's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, it would be actually even better if those Apple logos were a bit smaller. This way you really could believe it's a real Apple logo, because they are so huge that it cannot be. But still, let's talk about I'm turning to German, which is weird. sometimes mix up the languages. Let's talk about your product now, and first of all, the most successful product, and I guess the product you're most known for in the Mac community, which is eyeglasses.
Sure, yeah, eyeglasses was kind of a surprise hit, I guess you could say. Our first product was iChat USB Cam, which is just the USB camera program, and you know, most of our programs they come out of suggestions from existing customers, you know, and as soon as we picked up an eyesight, you know, we obviously noticed the eyesight is much too dark, unless you have, you know, studio lighting in your house, which I think most people don't. So what we tried to write this program, and sure enough, it turns out the eyesight is a really powerful camera. I mean, it's very, very sensitive to light. So we added these settings, you know, got a nice simple interface in there, and it did turn out to be really popular. Since then, we've just been adding, new features. You know, people are suggesting, for example, the latest feature mm-hmm. we added was the ability to rotate 90 degrees. So you can mount your eyesight sideways.
Okay.
And that's been a really popular feature.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just stick your eyesight on the side of your flat screen monitor or something.
Cool. Yeah. Actually, it comes from your opinion that the eyesight is not using those is not doing the job from itself. Like for example, on the new iMacs, I have an iMac 20-inch Cordu. You have this light detector, which is actually pretty cool. I never realized that, but if you think about it, it's not gonna turn the light of the dimmer lightly if it's dark, so that you can sleep in the same room as the iMac. So it has a light detector, so it could actually use in combination with the eyesight. This light detector to turn on those things. Why, in your opinion, is not Apple doing those things automatically? I mean, which is good for you, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't, that's a really good question, but then there's also a light sensor on the power books. I mean, actually determines how bright the keyboard light is. And all I can think of is that Apple, you know, that they're really into multimedia and video, and they probably just thought, you know, oh, it would just be, you know, it wouldn't be favorable for this thing to just keep adjusting the light quality. You know, if someone were to walk in front of a window, and suddenly, you know, the image drops or gets brighter or darker during your video, you know, they might not like that. But I mean, Apple's always had the philosophy to make something as simple as possible. And
yeah. But on the other hand, a nice side is obviously not made to make videos, which Apple tried to make you believe that to your customer, but it's not true. The iSight is just made to do video conferencing, nothing else. Same for the sound. They say the iSight has super quality stereo, super duper sound, and it has just a bullshit sound. I can speak from experiences. So the iSight is a really nice thing, and the integrated iSight is even a much nicer thing to do video conferencing. But after that, it's over. You can't really work with a 640x320, 640x480 resolution. In terms of doing videos or whatever, and but I guess you're pretty true in the sense that they try to do as simple as possible, and they don't want to be too complicated, and they don't want to have 3,000 different aspects. I mean, if we look today at iChat, it's pretty funny the way people configure iChat, because if I look at my one, for example, and we're gonna speak about that later on once again. But I have, for example, already 1, 2, 3, 4 plugins, I think. I mean, from Ecamm, I have eyeglasses and call recorder. I always mix both call recorder and conference recorder. Then I have checks, which everybody has, of course, because you can't work in iChat without tabs. It's almost impossible for most of the people. And then I have this ChatFX plugin from Script Software that, by the way, we're going to have normally on the next English podcast, Julian Miller from, I think Miller is his last name. Anyway, Julian from Script Software. So this plugged in the application. And which comes to my next question, by the way, and then after that we're going to make kind of a bit of a break in the interview and speak about a bit about the news, is that to fully use iChat you need a FireWire camera and a pretty new Mac. Actually, with iChat USB cam, as you said, and with PowerBoost, you solve both problems. So I'm used to think that you're the Robin Hood of iChat users.
Yeah.
Because you save them. Yeah, because it's really that. I mean, Robin Hood is just bringing money to the poor people. And you're bringing iChat to people not having the money to buy the last hardware.
Yeah, I mean, Apple's justification has always been, you know, they want to provide the user with, you know, the perfect video conferencing experience. So, you know, if you have a slow Mac or a USB camera, you know, you're not going to get the perfect conference. You know, but in a sense, I think that's kind of me. I don't know.
Yeah, but still, you're gonna have it. So, I mean, if you have a slow machine, I mean, you should be conscient about the fact that, of course, you're gonna have a pretty bad quality.
Yeah, in a sense, our customers have been pretty good about it. You know, if they decide to do a video conference on their, you know, 500 megahertz iBook, you know, they'll understand. You know, the reason it looks awful is because they have a really slow computer. And it's nice to get mail from customers who say, you know, oh, I was just able to video conference with my husband overseas, or I was just able to see my grandchildren that, you know, across the country. Mm-hmm. You know, and they have these old Macintoshes.
Yeah. And I mean, we speak about for upgrading your machine, because we can speak about two different things. We can speak about PowerBoost, which means you will have to upgrade your machine, or buy PowerBoost, and PowerBoost costs $8. So people out there, $8. It's almost like Ecamm is giving to you this product, which actually is pretty good from your side, having such nice prices. Of course, the software is not doing like thousands of things; it's just fixing a problem. But it's $8 instead of buying a new computer. And iChat USB cam, if you already have a USB cam and you don't want to put the $130 or $140, $50 for the iSight, it's also only $10. So it's actually also pretty cool.
Obviously our prices get a pretty good reception.
Well, I can imagine, because you can't really turn it lower. I mean, lower is free. So, which is cool, actually, because I have to applaud you guys at Ecamm for having such lower price for smaller products. Once again, I don't really think you can't ask $30 for iChat USB Cam or ProBoost. It would be a bit too much. And that's sometimes what some companies tend to do. They have some pretty neat applications, but tiny application, and they try to ask for $30, right? It's just not okay. I mean...
One approach that we have, actually, is we have some bundles. So, you know, if you go to our website and to buy one of our products, you know, we'll say, hey, you know, we've got these other cool tools as well, you know, and if you can throw, you know, two or three of them together, and still for maybe about $20, you can get three of our programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of success with that.
Yeah, of course. Which just makes sense. Actually, I've been speaking about prices because, of course, as a software developer, as a Mac developer, what's going to be the price of your app? It's a big question, and some people don't have any idea. And I've been talking about that with Andy Kim from Potion Factory, for example, when he was developing Voice Candy. And it turns out that the program is now $13. And which is a pretty nice price, because we were saying you can't really do a program like that, because it's also a really small program, not doing 3,000 things. You can't really sell something like that $30. I mean, same thing for AppZapper, which is a normal price, $13, I think, $14. But if you search here and there, and actually if you just use Palmcast as a coupon, POMCAST, you're gonna have it for $10. And most of the time they sell it for even less. So it's pretty cool, and I really guess there is you have more chance of earning money by selling a lot of cheap programs than the other way around.
That's the impression we get. And also, one other interesting thing we do is we accept PayPal payments. And sometimes I feel like, you know, people will come to our site and they'll see the $8 price tag. And then when they go to pay for it, they'll realize, oh, I have $8 in my PayPal account from, you know, last Christmas when I had money in there for something on eBay, and it's just been sitting around in my PayPal account. I might as well use that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, free money.
Virtual money is a revolution. It's so cool. I mean, not only PayPal, but, for example, I was a few days ago, I've been speaking about Spreadshirt, our partner for the t-shirts. Before Spreadshirt, we used Cafe Press, which is pretty cool, which is in America. And I've been looking again at Cafe Press and updating my website at Cafe Press, because for people living in America, it's still easier to buy at Cafe Press. So everything is updated now, cafepress.com/pumpcast, I think. And then when I wanted to buy things for myself, when I was about to pay, he told me, oh, by the way, you still have 10 cafe dollars or whatever, cafe cents. Do you want to use it? And this was actually the money I earned from people buying shirts from my site. So it's just virtual money, and it's a big thing. So I hope it's going to turn more and more like that we can use virtual money. Because, I mean, the same way with PayPal, I'm working with... for magzot.com, and they pay me with PayPal. And when I gotta buy something, I always have a few $100 in my PayPal accounts. So
I think Magzot, they accept PayPal exclusively.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think they take regular credit card processing. My guess is that nobody probably minds at all, because so many people have a PayPal account these days.
Well, I mean, if you're a Magzot visitor, you're anyway a connected guy. You're somebody being on the internet and living with the internet, so PayPal is something normal for you.
That's a good point.
So, you know, it's no problem about that. And sometimes you have to make choices where you can maybe lose some customers, but on the other way, it can also be much more easier from you, and credit cards are taking a bit of a charge for themselves. So, which is, I mean, also I've been receiving some donations from people, from guys, not thousands of dollars, maybe altogether $60. When those guys give me $10, because they give it with a credit card and not with a PayPal account directly, there is a few cents going away for the credit card, which is bad when you buy something, but which is even more bad when you do a donation. anyway, we're gonna turn to the next thing. We're gonna come back to the rest of the interview after all. But now we're gonna speak about the news a bit, and of course you are invited to react with me about the different news we're gonna speak about. We spoke about that last week in the French podcast, and by the way, we're gonna turn 1 year old next week. Dear listeners, well, at least for the French part, we started May 31st, 2005. So this Wednesday we're gonna turn 1 year old, and we'll try to prepare something for the French listeners, because they are listening to us since 1 year. English guys, we started only in November, and in German in August. But I wanted to speak about the iPod Nike thing first of all, because it's a pretty huge thing. I guess you saw it also this week.
Yeah, I guess if you're really into sports, you know, this is the iPod for you.
even if you're not into sport, that's what I want to speak about. Now, by the way, in Pumpcast, I don't really give news anymore, but I just discussed about news because it's much more interesting. I wanted to have your take on that, but I think actually it's pretty smart from both Apple and Nike, because the set itself, this receptor transmitter, is only $30, which is no money. But it's not to sell the set itself that they do that. It's just because they want to sell more iPods and more Nikes. And I'm pretty sure they're gonna succeed in this mission, because first of all, people that does not walk, well, I mean, does not run, they're gonna buy this thing and they're gonna start running because it's cool. You know what I mean?
I don't think they can go wrong. Yeah. From a marketing perspective, you have two products that people really buy them because of the actual brand name themselves. I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You buy an iPod, so you have an iPod, you know, in this day and age, and you buy Nike because you want to have the Nike logo. You know, you trust the name, and you don't want to have some other name there. Mm-hmm. So combining two powerful brand names like that is great.
Yeah, well, and it does actually a lot of pretty cool things. I personally don't really like that it's once again another thing that you plug on your dock. So. It's you're really have if you want, you can have 20 of those small adapters that you put on the dock. So, but anyway, it's the way they chose to go at Apple, but it's pretty cool, because it seems like it's taking a lot of information from how far you run and how fast you are, and also there is a new kind of a new technology which adapts the BPMs, so the beat of the music you are listening, depending or on how fast or how slow you run. So if you're running slow, it's gonna play something pretty cool, and if pretty slow. And if you're running fast, if you're sprinting, it probably is gonna speed some techno music at 180 BPMs.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now you get me interested.
Yeah, it's this thing is actually now just opening possibilities, and once again something from Apple that is just, you only see the a pretty small size of the moon, so to say, and it's opening a lot of possibilities, a lot of things which you still cannot imagine. And something I also did not realize is that it opens opportunities to sell things on the iTunes Music Store once again. So the same way as the iTunes Music Store is there to sell iPods, the iPod plus Nike is also there to sell things on the iTunes Music Store, because you're gonna, I think you'll have to buy your workout or whatever they call it, which there is also a new section in the iTunes Music Store somewhere which is called sports music. So it's once again a whole market, a whole commercial thinking, and I have to say I'm pretty impressed how far that they think. I've been discussing with a friend of mine, a girl, about the iPod, and because she had another MP3 player, a really small one, I don't even remember the name, but it was a pretty known brand, and it was once one of those USB MP3 player, pretty good of course, which is actually like an iPod Shuffle but with a screen, so where Apple doesn't have anything, so to say, because you know a lot of people don't really like that the Shuffle doesn't have a screen. And they don't really have a nano, want to have a nano for different reasons. And she said to me, what I really hate in the nano is that when you buy the nano, you're obliged to buy something else. So first of all, now you don't even have the power outlet anymore. And she told me, I'm not everywhere with my laptop, so I want to be able to just charge this thing with a power outlet, and then I have to buy a power outlet. And the iPod Nano is nice, but it's so nice that it's getting scratches everywhere, so I have to buy a protective case for the iPod Nano. And she kept on saying, I have to buy this and this and that. And I was agreeing. I was saying, yeah, but you know what? Apple is it's called Apple Incorporated. It's not called the Red Cross. So Apple is there to make money, and it's pretty obvious. And although we could sometimes think, damn, they gotta make money, but not mine, please. On the other hand, I'm always impressed how they find a way to make money.
Yeah, at the same, I'm impressed, but at the same time, not including a power adapter is just low. And when's the last time you bought something without a power adapter? Come on.
It's pretty bullshit.
Can you imagine that same thing happening with a cell phone or a digital camera?
I can't really, but on the other hand, well, yes, I can imagine that happening with the iPhone when it comes, in any cases. You will have to connect it to your Mac to charge it. But I've always spoke about that, especially in the French podcast, about my iPod Photo, which about, when the iPod Photo came, so October 2004, which came with everything at that time, which came with the protective case, which came with the docking station, with the FireWire and USB cables, so both cable, with the power outlets, with the drivers, with the headphones, whatever, with everything. And of course I paid it a lot of money. It was something like 659 euros, which is a lot of money, which could be turned into something like 800 bucks or even more. And the reason why I paid so much is because you have everything, all the accessories, and now when you buy an iPod, the box is of course three times smaller as my box of my iPod, because you got the iPod, you got the USB cable, if you want a FireWire cable, I'm sorry, and you got the headphones, and that's it. You have nothing else. But on the other hand, myself, if I wouldn't had the docking station, wouldn't be sad. If I wouldn't had the USB cable, I wouldn't be sad. And by the way, that's the reason why I, for a long time, I could not buy a new iPod, because they don't come with FireWire cables anymore. And everybody knows that a lot of people still now don't have USB 2 on their Macs, because of a stupid strategical choice, we could say it that way, from Apple. But I guess Apple thought they're gonna drop the price and put as less accessories as possible, and if you want those accessories, then you pay.
I think it's pretty silly.
Yeah, but still,
a power adapter must cost them 5 cents.
Yeah, the power adapter is a bit silly. Yeah, all the rest I pretty much understand, this thing of USB 2, because it's easier, and because they go into a more general way of thinking, that of course 90% of the people having an iPod are PC users, and so they have USB 2 but they don't have FireWire, but the power adapter is anyway pretty silly. But well, we can come back to the iPod Nike thing, because there is 3,000 things to say about that, The first thing, the other thing I wanted to react on is everybody's thinking now, if first of all this thing is only working with the Nano, because some people have an iPod 5G and 30 gigs, they are not that big, and they have memory shock protection, so everybody's wondering if this thing is going to work with something as the Nano. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure not. Pretty sure it's only going
to
work.
Yeah,
with the Nano.
I would have to say no.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's. I mean, is anyone really going out for a jog with a $700, 60 gigabyte iPod? I'm not sure. What do you think?
It's not $700 anymore, but. Yeah, but I really think one of the reasons why it's only going to work with the Nano is because I'm pretty convinced it's going to work with something else coming, which namely will be, if it comes one day or another, this nice iPhone thing, whatever it's called, or another smaller iPod, whatever. You know what's funny is they seems to make a bits more of work on the iPod Nano than on the iPod 5G. You know what I mean?
A bit more what?
They work and they. It seems like my feeling is that Apple is pushing a bit more the Nano than the 5G, than the iPod Video.
Oh yeah, no, there's no question. And I don't see any reason to believe Apple won't come up with even more form factors. And right now they just have the Shuffle, the Nano, and the full size.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, the Nano is, you know, it's too small.
Yeah.
You know, little kids are getting a Nano for their birthday, and they look at it and they say, "This is it. This thing is so tiny." You know, honestly, it doesn't even feel like much in your hand. I mean,
yeah, but still, it's cool.
There's definitely still a market for something that's shaped more like the Mini, and I think that we can probably expect a new Mini. Honestly, I mean.
I don't think so.
Something
well,
random,
well
think so?
I have an iPod Photo, and I'd be glad to have a Nano because, and I'm looking for the Nano because I've been using testing the Nano and at the Apple Expo in Paris. And first of all, it has memory. It's all memory, no hard drive, and this is a huge advantage because it's not the hard drive is not running, it's not heating, it's not crashing, it's not buffering. So it's a big, huge advantage. Second of all, it's so small and slim, so tiny, that it's pretty cool. Actually, you can put it in your wallet, for example. So, which is cool. But the thing we've discussed also lately in the show was that we are all pretty sure, and I guess you will agree, that the iPod Shuffle has not a long life from now on. That it's pretty much dead.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. The no screen thing, I don't think it went over very well.
No. Actually, it's more like an in-between thing. This Shuffle was the in-between waiting for the Nano iPod. And now that I have the Nano 1 gigabyte, what actually will pretty much occur is that in a few weeks or months, they're going to drop the prices of the Nano once again and hopefully bring a higher capacity Nano. I would love to have an 8GB Nano because 4GB is too small for me. And then drop the price and we'll have 1GB iPod Nano for something like, I don't know, $120. And then drop the Shuffle. But still, the Shuffle form factor, I mean, the market where Apple never wanted to be a few years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember. They said, as usual, we're not going to go there. Still, Apple has a role to play over there and bring something which looks like a Shuffle, but with a small screen. Don't know if they're going to do that, but anyway. Anyway, we were supposed to speak about iPod Nano, but we always turn to speak about the iPod Nano. So now we're going to come back a bit to the interview. We're going to come back, I was about to say. And the first thing I wanted to say is, here at Pumpcast, we used to love Gizmo because you can record with it. That was a big problem in iChat and in Skype. And you guys actually... once again repaired this missing feature in both iChat and Skype, so maybe you can tell us about Conference Recorder and Call Recorder.
Sure, yeah. iChat recording was the first thing that we did. I mean, it's this kind of flowed from all our other iChat plugins. People were suggesting to us that, you know, they'd love to be able to record their conferences for various reasons. So we, you know, we bared down and made it happen. It kind of got off to a rocky start, though. I don't know if you ever saw the original version of Conference Recorder.
No.
You know, we thought we had this great interface. We were really proud of it. It was basically a floating VCR, like a video, like a very retro-looking video recorder on the screen.
Yeah.
And you know, we thought it was great. Within a day or so, we had multiple emails demanding that we get rid of this ugly, ugly interface. And some of them were actually from, you know, artists. So, wow, that was quite an experience. So in version 2, I think we got it right. We just have this really simple, you know, window that blends into the Mac, and it just has a record button and a settings button.
Yeah.
And another button to reveal your files. And that interface has actually been a really big hit, because for people that, you know, are not technical, you know, iChat invites a, you know, really non-technical audience, and, you know, for someone who wants to record their conference, they're never going to be able to figure out some of these other programs.
Yeah.
You know, they literally just want to press record, and, you know, so far that's been a pretty big hit. The Skype recorder kind of just flowed naturally from that. You know, people were asking us, you know, this is great, but, you know, now I use Skype. I'd love to be able to record that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's actually, because you said Skype recorder, but it's called Call Recorder.
Oh, yeah, it's a call recorder for Skype.
By the way, and I always have problems with this, by the way. You have one product called Conference Recorder, the other one Call Recorder. Is there a reason why you didn't call those simply iChat Recorder and Skype Recorder?
Mostly for, you know, I guess you could say legal reasons. Typically,
yeah, I guess.
Know, companies are not going to let you use their trademark in the name of your software.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually a big no-no for Apple products.
Yeah.
You're
not
even allowed to have the word Apple or Mac in your product name.
Yeah. Well, for Apple, I can almost understand it, but for Mac, it's going a bit too far. Yeah, you know, it's like the story of Apple asking all the websites having iPod in their name to remove it.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Palm did the same thing. Palm told everyone to get rid of the word Palm in the name of their software, which was ridiculous because half the software was Palm this or Palm that.
Yeah. Well, I'm always waiting the day when Apple is gonna forbid people to use the I letter. Because it's only for iLife. We're the only one to be allowed to use this. But one of the ways to think about which one is which one with your two products is just that Skype is not yet doing video. So when you think about Conference Recorder, you think, okay, iChat is doing video. And that's also the cool thing, by the way, in your product is that it's not only recording audio in iChat, but also video.
Yeah, that presented a challenge for us because we actually have to do a lot of work behind the scenes to sync up the audio and the video and put it into the movie. And, you know, when Skype, eventually, I'm assuming we'll have a video version, we'll try and be right there, you know, with the video recording.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually you talked about the new interface you have in version 2 of your software. That's something I really like, because if there is something I expect from plugins like that, is that they plug really good in, so that you don't even see that it's plug-in. And it's really neat the way this window is floating. Actually docked on iChat. Of course, the only problem is, like I told you, this kind of a little interference that you have between your plugin and the one of the guys of Script Software, that you both are sticked on the bottom, so one is hiding the other. Hopefully for you, you are the one on the top. I don't know why.
Well, I don't know. We tried it as well, and I think that it varies. We actually got ourselves to be hidden, and then we hid the chat effects,
really?
And brought it back, and then we were on top.
Because I mean, if you hide chat effects, it's not a problem because chat effects is much bigger. But I guess you'll just have to work a way to put it on top. as an option, top or bottom, or even right left, because it could be really nice. But you know, that's actually the problem with iChat. It's so plugged with a lot of plugin that at the end of the day you don't. It's starting to be too much sometimes. But you do it really well, and especially also since the design, the interface of Skype Recorder is the same as the interface of iChat Recorder. We're not allowed to say that, so I hope we're not gonna have a legal email. But still, we understand each other. And the only difference is actually that in Skype you don't it's just an apart window, so you don't stick to the Skype user interface. Is there a technical reason for that, or just a choice?
We just figured that, you know, right now we'd rather not hang anything off the Skype window. The okay. floating window is actually also an option in iChat.
Oh, okay.
It's in the preferences.
Okay.
I guess there's not really any reason.
Okay. Yeah, attach recording controls to chat window. It's an option. Yeah. But I like this option, by the way, as a user. So because I personally hate multiple windows. That's one of the reasons why I can't use iChat if I don't have my lovely checks. It could also be the fact that I'm a switcher a few years ago, of course, in 99-2000, more precisely 2002-2003. But that's one of the things I hated on the Macintosh at the beginning, is that you have so much windows and you're never in full screen. Whereas in Windows, you're always in full screen.
Yeah.
I love the possibilities of having different options of docking elements together and things like that. So it's pretty cool thing. Was it harder or easier or different to make a plugin for Skype than for iChat? Because obviously you did the one for Skype after.
Well, the first one was obviously harder to do, you know.
Okay.
Because we were just figuring out what people wanted and the technical side of things, and also the video recording added an extra challenge there.
And the fact that you did one for Skype is just because people told it's neat, but I want to use it in Skype, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, we get email every day from people asking, you know, oh, can I do this? I'd love to be able to do this. You know, I'll send you a donation if you will add this feature.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really fun to see what kind of possibilities there are. Skype Recorder was one of the call recorder for Skype was just one of those things that we were able to do, you know, in the time that we have. And so far we really like Skype. I mean, it's a great program. It's amazing what you can do. I mean,
yeah. Well, I love Skype. I mean, at Pumcast we love Skype and we love Gizmo. Gizmo is not working anymore that much since I have an Intel Mac, but we really love it. The only thing we don't love is that we have so many different programs doing the same thing. That should not be, but none of those programs can do everything well. So
I was just today trying to explain the difference to my mother about why she should use Skype or iChat and what the difference was, and she was quite confused.
Well, I can imagine.
As soon as there was more than one way to do it, she was done.
Yeah, because I mean, Skype is good at automatic firewall configuration or whatever, or working with a firewall, which iChat is pretty bad at, because you get always this message. We had it just before we started the show, of you calling somebody and the answer is that you did not answer yourself. So it's pretty nice. That's something I told you off air, is it's one thing to have errors and to have bugs and to have error message, but it's another thing to display correct error message. And that's something iChat is doing pretty bad, because it gives you an error message which is not actually which is not the actual error message. It will tell you that you don't have enough bandwidth, whereas the error is just that your firewall is so configured that it cannot go through the port. And configuring your firewall for iChat, it's hell. Nobody want to do that. There is something like 20 or 30 different ports you need to open. Some of them in UDP, some of them in TCP. You need to have a master in computer science to be able to use this thing. But on the other hand,
the ability to call 10 million people is yeah. I think the amazing part of Skype. I mean,
you
can't not ignore it. It's a huge network.
Yeah, because Skype is working on the tree platform, so, and that's one of the reasons why everybody has Skype now, because you can call your Linux and Windows friends. There is actually, when I speak, there are 5 million people online. So it's huge. And I think it's pretty smart, by the way, from the guys from Skype to show that when you start, because it shows how successful they are. But on the other hand, it has also some disadvantages. For example, Skype is really bad at file transferring, but really, really bad at file transferring. There's also this problem at Skype that the version for Windows is always 1 year ahead of the version for Macs. At the beginning, it was only a few weeks, a few months, but now it turned like Skype 2.0 is official release, not a beta anymore, an official release since I guess 6 months on the PC, and we're still waiting for it. And when it's gonna come, they're gonna have the 2.5. Actually, it's a big question. How dangerous can be Skype for iChat when it has video? Because most of the time you will do a video with one person, not with two or three. Although I have to say, I do it with the guys from the podcast a lot of time, two, three, four together. But still, when Skype has the ability to do video conferencing with your Windows friends, or Linux friends anyways, it's going to be really a huge advantage, of course.
Yeah, I mean, iChat will always have the advantage of being, you know, part of Apple's end-to-end solution. You know, you take your Mac out of the box, you open iChat, and you click on your friend's name. You know, no other video conferencing solution will ever be that easy. Because, you know, you have to deal with getting a camera, you know, you got to make sure you have drivers set up. You know, some of that goes away with the new Macs with built-in cameras, but I don't envision any video conferencing solution being that easy.
Because that's,
you know,
that's
just
that's
clicking
the thing.
On someone's name. You know, I know people that really get that. They say, oh, you know, I just click on someone's head and then I can see them. You know, I understand that.
Well, you're pretty right, because I was about to say, yeah, it's like MSN on the PC, on Windows. When you have Windows, you have MSN Messenger installed, and everybody's using MSN Messenger, and that's the reason why we all cried for having all those programs working with MSN Messengers, because every single kid is using this thing. But the difference is, and I've been experiencing that myself with my PC, which has turned a few minutes a month, is that you always have to fight with drivers and with things like I have a new PC, I have a sound card in it, but Windows won't recognize the sound card. When I turn on my Mac, everything is recognized and everything works well. And if I want to use MSN Messenger with the video functionality, I need to buy a USB webcam, which is something I have to buy more, and something which might not work. Whereas with all the new iMacs, well, with the iMac and the new MacBooks, you have an integrated camera. And I think it's actually pretty amazing what's now in a Mac, because when you have an iMac or a MacBook, you have everything you need in those machines.
Oh, I got a sign.
The police is coming. Oh, I guess it's because we set Skype recorder and iChat recorder.
Yeah, they're on the way.
Shit. Run! Run! So, okay, so we're going to turn to the next question, which is another product you have. We can speak about that, which is Dockstar. So we leave a little bit the products which are about iChat and Skype. So you have another product called iChatter, so where everybody can look on the website what it does. You have a product which is also, I guess, a bit famous for the mail.app, which is Dockstar. Since I don't use the mail.app because I'm a big Gmail fan, and gmail.com is enough for me, because it's doing a lot of things that Mail is doing. But for people using Mail, it's kind of a must-have app. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Sure, yeah. Dockstar was an interesting story. According to my brother, he actually came up with the name of Dockstar, and then he had to figure out what it was going to do. And his major complaint with Mail was he had, you know, he used multiple mailboxes, and Mail only tell only puts that little icon, little, let me start over. It puts a little red icon on your dock
yeah.
to tell you that you have mail, but it only tells you about your inbox. So if you're using automatic filtering to put messages into different boxes, it'll never tell you about that mail. You
yeah.
know, it's just you have to bring mail to the foreground to see that you have, you know, messages in all your different mailboxes. So, you know, the obvious thing to do is, you know, to add more stars to the dock. And, you know, from there it was just really fun. We got to add all the different shapes and colors. And Dockstar
yeah.
will actually let you put up to 5 different mail badges on your mail icon. And you can customize them, put different shapes, different colors, different sizes. And so, for example, if you have anything in your draft mailbox, you know, Dockstar will tell you, you know, oh, you have 2 different messages that you haven't finished writing yet. Or if you have a mailbox, you know, of just, you know, messages about, you know, from your family, you know, you can have a special color devoted to your family.
Yeah. Well, and ladies and gentlemen, it's another $8 application. Yeah, you guys are pretty good at prices, because you can... you can buy all your product for less than $100, if not less than $60. Do you have a big bundle with everything?
You know, we should. You know, while I have everyone listening to this podcast, you know, if
yeah.
you want to go to our website and just buy all of our software, it's pretty easy to do. So just letting you know, you can go there,
okay.
buy everything.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But But then you need a better price, of course. Yeah, you should really, but because I mean, you have. I look at your software list here to be pretty detailed about everything you show here, except the more 3 dots. iChat USB cam, eyeglasses, conference recorder, call recorder, iChatter, Power Boost, Dockstar, Tech Sounds, Nutshell, Beam Pro, Dragon Tooth. I mean, a lot of the products. I mean, if not all the products can be used by everybody. So by a lot of people. So actually, it's and I'm always impressed with and I love small apps for a small price, and I love plugins. The only problem with plugins, and you guys know that, is that as a plugin developer, you could have one of your app dying because Apple would implement them, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
yeah,
you
I mean,
can. I guess you gotta live with that.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to, you know, stay on track. You know, we have to make sure that we have time to, you know, keep all of our current plugins working at the same time as generating new programs. And sometimes that can be a challenge. Apple is pretty good with getting out new OS releases.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, and Apple is really good with taking the ideas of the others also. So.
Oh, yeah, that's always something that's there. I mean, I think
yeah.
we'd be pretty flattered if Apple added some of these features to the program.
Yeah.
And we'd be right there, you know, ready to, you know, answer other people, answer new questions about what you can do with iChat.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, by the way, about taking the others of the other, did you heard this story of Dash Code, I guess?
I heard about it. Yeah, it was, I guess it was a, it's a dashboard,
Actually it's Xcode for dashboard.
Right.
It's a widget editor. But the interesting thing about that is, and I'm looking for the link live because I didn't really prepare that, because I want to give you a link to our website so that you can watch also live on the website. Is that this link, I think. Thank. Gonna test that. No, it's not this one, but I know which one it is because it's from Jasper. I don't know if you heard about Jasper Heuser, which is an icon designer.
No, I haven't.
No, it's a pretty famous, so to say, icon designer, which is a guy from the Netherlands. And if you look at this link I'm just seeing you through iChat, you're gonna see the new icon of Dash Code, which is out in May 2006, and he compares it with an icon with the icon from WidgetKit, which is an application from April 2005, so 1 year ago, which never came to life. Well, never came to be sold because Neometric Software, which means one of the guys of Neometric Software is Austin Sasser from FZapper. They didn't want to sell this application. One of the reasons was, I guess, that you don't want to do applications for developers if you want to make money. So, because you're gonna sell probably 20 of them, or it's a bit extreme the way I say it, but it's a bit in this direction. So, but if you look at the comparison with this icon and the similarities between this icon and the Apple Dash Code icon, it's pretty amazing, and it looks like they thought, oh, the icon is pretty nice, and we're gonna mix and match it with Xcode. But on the other hand, I have to say, and I didn't discuss with Jasper about that, but if you look at the Xcode icon and you look at the WidgetKit icon, of course the WidgetKit icon is a bit like the Xcode icon from the beginning on. So it's the same story as Adobe copying Micromedia, which is copying Adobe. So
yeah,
I mean, and it's cool if people are copying each other in a way, because it makes it going further instead of staying. Yeah, so that's the only thing. Is this, I just wanted to mention this reflection of Jasper on his weblog called Differentiation.
And, yeah, the side by side image is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
everyone should go and check out this link. It's
I'll put the link on the show notes on podcast.com. It's on Jasper Heuser's website, where you can, by the way, find all the icons that he did. If you go on the root of this website, by the way, Glenn, you can go live and click on icon design. Then you will see all the icons he did, and I guess you will recognize some of them, if not all, because he did a lot of different icons, and some of them are pretty amazing, if not all. Now we're into it since already 1 hour, so we're gonna go further in the news, because I wanted to speak. I spoke about Dash Code, by the way, so I don't have to speak about that at the end of the show. So I will also put the links to Dash Code, which was released with the new MacBooks, which is an application pretty neat. The only question with Dash Code is why it's only coming now. It should have come with Tiger 1 year ago at least. So, but I mean, it's better than never. The next question I had for you before that that we speak about the news once again a bit is. Are you was personally and professionally impacted by the Intel switch?
Oh boy, that mean.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
For
personally,
you?
Personally, it's great because, you know, it was a good excuse to get a new Mac Mini, you know, because I needed it as a developer, you know, for testing. So, you know, any excuse that I can come up with to get a new Mac is great.
Yeah.
Secondly, you know, now I don't have to have a Windows box in my house.
Yeah, which is
fantastic.
Which is really cool.
I mean, I don't have to feel like anyone's going to be hacking into my house. If I need Windows, you know, I boot it up.
Yeah.
Do whatever I need to do, and then, you know, switch back to the Mac.
It's so cool. I just interviewed 2 seconds because I want to react on what you said. I myself have still in this home 2 PCs and 3 Macs. And since boot camp, I'm pretty sure I'm never gonna buy a PC anymore, because now when you have a Mac, you also have a PC.
Yeah, and I mean I can't believe what Apple's done. I mean a lot of people might not realize how much of an undertaking it must have been for all these Apple engineers to sit down and write, you know, the keyboard drivers, the Bluetooth drivers, the what else do they have to do? All the different the sound card driver, you know, all that stuff just to get this working. And then when you finally boot up Windows, it works. It's fantastic. I can use my Bluetooth trackball, I can use my Bluetooth keyboard, you know, and everything works like a charm. The networking is perfect. It's like having a real Windows XP box, meaning it probably has about 100 viruses by now. But
by the way, they stipulate that on the website of Bootcamp, that they don't protect, bootcamp is not protecting you from the viruses.
Oh, no, no way. I mean, this is,
I found
these
it funny.
Things are just as vulnerable as,
yeah,
as any Windows XP box, especially since they're being used by someone who doesn't know much about Windows XP, presumably.
Yeah.
You know, I'm terrified. I won't even open Internet Explorer.
Well, don't. I mean, there are some ways of protecting a PC. Well, the first way to protect it is don't start Internet Explorer except for downloading Firefox. When I'm on a PC, that's the first thing I do. I download Firefox. But still, even with Firefox, it's hell. And when you tell today to people having PCs why you're on the Mac, and the first thing I always say is, first of all, because I don't want to have viruses. They look like crazy, and they say, "What? You mean you don't have viruses on the Mac?" I say, "No, we don't have any." They say, "It's not possible," because people, not being on a Mac, PC people, don't realize it's possible to have a computer without viruses. It belongs to it for them.
Not just viruses, but I mean all this, the ability of Internet Explorer to install, you know, little plugins and add-ons and things working behind the scenes. Really, I mean.
Yeah.
If there's anything I've seen with these Windows users is, it slows down after a couple of months, the thing takes about 10 minutes to boot Internet Explorer.
Yeah. But so you mean professionally was not that easy for you guys?
Professionally, we lost a lot of cycles. You know, I think most developers, that you have to, you know, stop whatever you were planning on doing and say, okay, you know, now we have to do a universal binary version of all of our programs, and we're still working through, you know, a couple of our apps to get a new version out. And you know, basically just losing a lot of time. Fortunately, Apple was really good at, you know, furnishing developers with Intel Macs early on. You know, developers were able to get their hands on these things.
Yeah.
You know, and Apple was, you know, really nice about it. You know, they didn't want to anger their developers, obviously. They wanted to be as nice as possible about it. Oh, yeah, no, by the way, we're switching processors entirely. You know, they were...
By the way.
They were great. I mean...
Yeah, they told me 6 months
before.
As far as
a new... Switching to a new processor is a huge undertaking, and the fact that they didn't really have a whole lot of technical problems was really nice. I mean, it would have been awful if Apple came up with these new computers and they had some sort of big hardware flaw.
But on the other hand, I've heard that this switch is not as dramatic as the switch to power PCs at the beginning of the 90s.
Well, that was...
Because you remember this one also, or what?
Yeah, I remember that, and it was much more gradual.
Okay.
You know, they introduced Carbon, and then they which, you know, worked on both platforms.
Okay.
For developers, it was an absolute nightmare because you really, in order to make your app PowerPC native, it wasn't just a recompile. I mean, you had to do a whole lot of things. You know, move it into a complete new development environment, essentially.
Hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, the way they handled that was they did a very, very gradual switch, and they maintained a lot of reverse compatibility.
Okay. Now we're going to speak a bit, just a few minutes about the Fifth Avenue Apple Store. I'm losing my words. So you guys are on the East Coast. Sorry. So I guess you are also pretty interested by this store. How far are you from New York, by the way?
I think we're about 4.5-hour drive. Maybe 3.5 if you were to drive fast.
It's okay.
I mean, but it's exciting what Apple's done is they've essentially created, you know, a monument to Apple.
Yeah, really?
You know, right in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
You know, and you can bet that any Apple fanatic, you know, it's going to be on their list. You know, they go to New York, you know, I got to see the Empire State Building, I got to go
anyway.
See the Statue of Liberty. And, you know, after that, let's go hit the Apple Store.
Well, the other way around, you mean? First?
Oh, yeah, I don't know what order they're going to go in.
Look the Apple Store, and if you have a bit of time, you're going to look at the Liberty Statue. You know, yeah, I was in New York a few years ago, and I was, and I'm still, but less active, a big, huge hip-hop fan, so New York is like the Mecca. I've been visiting things like Fat Beats before that I visit the Liberty Statue. Because, of course, Liberty Statue is nice, but it's for tourists, for normal people. So you want to visit your thing, your particular things before. And this thing is really amazing. I mean, what they did on an architectural side of the things, and how big it is inside, and and this thing of 365 24/7, it's the biggest thing ever, and it's, of course, it's New York, so it's the city that never sleeps, and like Steve Jobs said, for closing 6 hours in the night, we better not close. So I'm just wondering when they wash this thing, when the cleaning team is working.
Oh, they're gonna have to do it
in between
when the store's up. The kind of the cool thing is a friend of mine sent me an instant message. I think 2 days ago he said, "My power adapter, it's broken. I need to drive down to New York.
I need
tomorrow. Where am I gonna get a power adapter?" I said, yeah. "You know, well, there happens to be a 24-hour Apple store in New York."
Yeah,
and he hadn't heard about it, you know. So that kind of saved the day for him.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah, he was like, you know, it's the middle of the night. And the Apple stores on the East Coast are closed.
Yeah.
And I need to leave for New York tomorrow morning. I was like, you know, it just so happens that you are all
cool.
Set, my friend.
No, but it's cool. And I guess it's of course it's the actually the best Apple store you can visit, you can ever visit. I'm not sure if it's the biggest one. But it's anyway the I guess one of the most beautiful ones. Even though it's in the other underground. And actually, when they said that to Steve Jobs a few years ago, he said, "What? You want to put us in the underground?" No, you. And then they came up with this idea of this big cube showing inside. It's pretty cool, actually. And don't know if you saw it, by the way, on the unofficial Apple weblog, a photoshopped picture of a tag on the Apple, on the cube.
A price tag?
Yeah, no, not a price tag, a real bomb tag, call it? Graffiti. A graffiti.
Is it real?
yeah, but it's not real. It's Photoshop. But it was well made. They took a picture of a guy washing the mirrors, and then they did a Photoshop trick, and try to make a thing like if it was a real thing. I can send you the link, by the way.
It's only a matter of time before that thing gets marked up.
This one, I just sent you, which is French, but the link is English. It was on iPhone Apple Store. And over there, there is a link to look closely. And then, you get it?
Yeah, it's coming up.
And, cool.
That's
this
perfect.
Is really cool. Yeah, that's really cool. So we spoke about that. We're gonna turn to the last question, and then we're gonna leave because it's already a big hour and we're together. The last question is pretty important, actually. First of all, I have another question I ask sometimes to people: is why you're on the Mac and not on the PC? To make it simple.
For me, it's kind of, you know, I could say, oh yeah, it's better, but it wouldn't really be fair. I was kind of raised on the Mac. My father bought my brother and I a Mac, you know, when we were 12 years old. And, you know, of course you can't switch once you start using it.
Yeah.
So it just kind of went from there. We survived the rocky 1990s.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, I came up at the end of it. I discovered the Mac in 99, so...
I mean, those Macs that were in the mid-90s were absolutely awful. They were terrible. Yeah. There was nothing good about them.
Really?
Even the first iMac, it was just terrible.
Okay. In terms of of speed or what?
OS 9.
Yeah, yeah.
Was just never stable. It froze all the time. The USB mouse froze all the time. It was you'd get CDs stuck in the CD-ROM drive. They wouldn't come out. I think the reset button was one of the most popular buttons to press, especially developing for a computer where the entire USB chain would freeze. It's just not pleasant.
Right. I wasn't really impressed by OS 9 at that time. That's the reason why I waited and I stayed on my Windows world until macOS 10 came. And so I was there in 99, and then I just bought a Mac in 2000 or 2001, I think. Two Macs, actually. And then I just sold them a few months later because I was not impressed by macOS 9. And in beginning of 2003, really the beginning, I bought again a Mac when it was Jaguar, so 10.2, then macOS was usable.
Yeah, I mean even 10.0 was pretty rough, too.
Yeah, but it was
slow. I think people's expectations were so low that they kind of gave Apple a little leeway with OS 10, but that never really would have been seriously adopted.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so my last question really is, if you had one wish to send to Cupertino, what would it be? Hard question. Just one.
Yeah, I mean...
Because I guess you have 1,000.
Personally, I think I would really like them to make a real media center. You know, I was playing with the Mac Mini. You know, it comes with a remote control.
Mm-hmm.
You can put any screen you want on it. And Front Row is... It's really nice in theory.
Yeah, but it's not,
if,
does
if
not
they,
always
if
work.
Tied in, if they tied in a TiVo, you know, and cable television, and worked out all the bugs, you know, I could just get rid of my, you know, everything in my living room and just have, you know, a Mac Mini and a nice big flat-screen monitor.
Yeah.
And a remote control with four buttons on it. And do everything that I can do right now with all the other equipment in my entire entertainment system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just sitting there, you know, and they've got to be working on it. But, you know, that's what I would really like.
Yeah.
I think that they could really make some waves. So, I mean, if you compare that to what Windows offers for their media center, it's so much more simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's out of the box.
Yeah. Now you talk about a Mac Mini to a TV. Just send you a link of the blog of Mike Mattes, which is the guy who was working on Delicious Library and now working at Apple, obviously working on Leopard and the user interfaces of Leopard, so which makes me think it's going to be pretty cool if Mike Mattes is working on that. And he has a picture of his Sony Bravia 40 inches LCD plugged into an Intel Mac Mini running Front Row, and it looks pretty huge, actually.
See, this is what I want, but the Front Row is so... Front Row is kind of... It doesn't work that well.
Not always. But it's a good start, and it's doing better, but it's still not that perfect. And when you do a demo to somebody showing, look how cool it is, and that it's taking 3 minutes before it shows you the list of your photos, it's not really... You can't really... well, by the way, it's an advice to all the guys wanting to do a demo to people. Don't try to do a demo with Front Row, neither with iChat AV, because it's not going to work when you're going to do the demo. It's going to work after, but not. It's the demo effect. So try to show something else, like Exposé is what was working, or the dashboard. I pretty much hate dashboard, but it's still cool. Okay, so that's it for this time. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a great time.
We are going to... keep in touch, and if you have some new products, we'll speak about that, of course. And except that, I'm gonna finish the show with the sentence I'm used to finish with it, which is actually the sentence everybody's listening at the beginning of the show when it's post-produced. So you didn't really listen to it now, but you will listen to it in a few days when it's online.
Okay.
It's the sentence of Steve Jobs, actually, which says that he looked himself in a mirror a few years ago, actually 30 years ago, and asked himself if he really wanted to do what he was about to do this day. And you guys, dear listeners, have to ask you the same question every day, every single day. Do I really want to do what I'm going to do today? And if the answer is no, there is a pretty simple thing to do. It's just that you gotta switch. See you. Bye-bye, Glenn.
See you later.